Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. It's 4:30 p.m. Eastern, the 14th of April, 2020. And the purpose of this show is to share the information found in the spiritual teachings of the Billy Meier case. Really all aspects of the case. I think all aspects of the case, though, in many ways, support the spiritual teachings. I like to go back to the overview, and that's why I a lot of times will go back to who Billy is and how this whole thing started. Back in 1943, Edward Albert Meyer started to get telepathic messages from an extraterrestrial human named Spoth, who had come to the Earth with specific intentions to mentor a young boy in Switzerland. Now, these extraterrestrial peoples are called the Pleiaren, and they have the ability to track spirit forms. And they've had tracked the spirit form of Edward Albert Meyer in his previous lives. And they had seen that he had been Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. And he'd also been important other people in history, like Aristotle, Socrates, Mozart, Mendelssohn, Rasputin, and Galileo is the other one I was trying to think of. Also, he was Henoch with a K, Henoch with a CH, and there were several Henochs, as well as in the ancient past, on other worlds, this young boy had incarnated as Nocodemian. Now, I don't know that Spoth had all of that information when they first started having their meetings, but Spoth did know he was intentionally mentoring this specific boy because he would grow up to be a great teacher. That would teach, again, something called the teaching of the spirit. And the teaching of the spirit has something called the creational natural laws, which are being taught. And the first one that I typically talk about is the law of love. And that's effective love, family love, brotherly love, non-romantic love, the motto might be live and help live. But what's interesting specifically about this kind of love is that it radiates from creation. Creation is the universal consciousness, but it's also the universe. This love is radiating, particularly if you get the opportunity to be out in nature. It's very important, I think, for people to live in close access or right in nature so they can stay connected to this psychologically. Because the people of the earth are no longer connected to nature psychologically, we've started a downward spiral. And you may have been heavily impacted by this downward spiral in terms of the coronavirus. But this coronavirus is very representative of the kinds of prophecies that the Meyer information has been talking about for decades. Now, what's interesting about the coronavirus is I think the most damaging thing that will come from it is the economic destruction. And this, in my opinion, the leakage of the of the biological material occurred in Wuhan, China, probably last year. And it came from one of those bioweapons labs they have over there. And coronavirus got loose. And they essentially, the Chinese essentially poisoned their own people with this coronavirus. However, I don't think it's really something to fear too much, because if you'll use vitamin C and D3 and zinc and colloidal silver, make sure you drink a lot of fluid, of course, get a lot of rest. Don't overexert yourself and exercise, but make sure you do exercise. And then practice the second creational natural law, which is the law of harmony. And that means you're going to think in a neutral, positive, equalized balance. And I've picked out certain things from the Might of Thoughts. And I recite these to myself. And they help strengthen the neutral, positive, equalized balance that occurs. And interestingly, the Talmud of Emmanuel talks about doing this same kind of thing, where you speak to your own consciousness. And it produces what I could call a consciousness healing. So tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm the master of my own destiny, the forger of my own fortune, the creator of my own good luck. I do not allow my thoughts to drift on the ocean of life. I steer my thoughts like a captain steers his ship. I nurture my thoughts. I clarify my thoughts. I strengthen my thoughts. It is the nature of the thoughts that by their might alone, every conceivable thing can be brought to fruition. And that's a very powerful statement, that every conceivable thing can be brought to fruition. And this is the power of our own thinking. So it's very important to stay in that neutral, positive, equalized balance. And reciting the things that you've memorized is one way to do it, you know, to speak to your consciousness. Now, Emmanuel, when he was walking around, quote-unquote, healing people, he wasn't really miraculously healing people. He was speaking to them in a way using what the Talmud talks about as auto-suggestion. And it was kind of hypnotic in some ways. It talks about him speaking a kind of a hypnosis. And what he was doing was actually releasing the healing power in these people, their own healing power. It wasn't miraculous. And the same thing happened in the Talmud, where they would talk about the people, quote-unquote, possessed by evil spirits. Well, they were really possessed by delusional thoughts. And all Emmanuel, he had a very powerful hypnotic kind of auto-suggestion, and his own thinking and his own speech would free up these people's self-healing. So they would go into a neutral positive state and go into the law of harmony. So what the law of harmony says, that the thoughts must be progressive and neutral positive equalized. And so if you have suffering, as a rule, suffering is an effect of some form of wrong thinking. You probably in some way or another have some wrong thinking, if you're suffering. And incidents of suffering in the life are indicators that you've broken the law of harmony, or it's been disregarded, or you just don't even know about it yet. And so this is a second creational natural law, as this overall larger arching teaching called the teaching of the spirit. So first is the law of love, the law of harmony, and I skipped over the law of striving. And it says in the Meyer material that the creation, down to its tiniest building blocks, the creation is entirely devoted to the striving. And the striving to a person means delectation. It means satisfaction. If you are not striving hard enough, and sometimes we have to strive harder than we even think we can handle. If you're lost in suffering right now, one of the ways to pull out of that suffering is through striving. And you can like work just in your garage. You can clean up your closet, mundane tasks, but focus on the striving. And that will help you. If you can take one, gain control of one small part of your life, then you can gain control of others. So the law of striving is a fundamental law of all evolution. Without striving, there is no sense of life. Now, this other creational natural law, and it'd be interesting to know if Spoth taught these to Billy from the beginning. The other one is the law of system and order, which means we should try to structure our lives in terms of what we do at certain times and stay within that structure. I could use a lot of improvement in this in my own life. Some people are very good at it by their very natures. But if you want to have a happy, successful life, then the daily life has to be structured and you have to adhere to this structure. It's called the law of system and order. And if you're not striving as hard as you should be, if you're not careful about following the law of harmony, then it can be harder even, I believe, to use the law of system and order. And what the law of system and order again says is that you have a certain schedule that you stick to. And if you don't, then you can have purposelessness and aimlessness and disorder. But if you want success and contentment, then apply the law of harmony, the law of system, and order, the law of striving. So these are the creational natural laws, and of course the law of love. These are the creational natural laws. There is another one called the law of provision. Still one I'm trying to wrap my mind around. And it's talking about that prosperity is first internal. Prosperity and abundance are first and foremost of an inner nature. And they're expressed in joy, love, peace, freedom, harmony. And then only secondly as material wealth and so on. So those are a quick review of the creational natural laws. I don't know if Spoth told Billy about, I'm sure he mentioned them. I don't know how, to what depth he went into these. Another interesting thing, which I haven't really figured out yet, is exactly when, you know, at some point, you know, Billy's mentorship, when Billy was being mentored first by Spoth for 11 years, and then Askit for 11 years, and then Semyase was only 4 or 5 years. And at some point, when did Billy really start to focus on his writing and his own teaching? Just a question more than anything. Something to ponder, a rhetorical question. There are some very important German words I'll just cover quickly. The first being creation. Creation is referred to as a Wesenheiten. In other words, it has no personality. And its self-determination is not so extensive. The the universal consciousness functions, you talk about system and order, it's all about system and order. It does things at a specific time, in a certain way, you know, it's expanding for a certain number of years, and then it contracts after the expansion phase. I think it's 152.52 trillion years that it expands and then it goes into its contraction phase. The creation is an intelligence, but it's no personality. This is hard for us to wrap our minds around. It radiates love, yet it doesn't require anything for that love. It doesn't require anything from the human being. It's not a heavenly father. It doesn't, you know, a father really has to interfere with their child's life, at least for a certain time during when the children are small. It has to violate their free will so they don't kill themselves or hurt other people, but mostly kill themselves. The creation cannot be a heavenly father. It cannot be a father figure, because it really doesn't punish either. It doesn't require anything from the humans, and it doesn't interfere. It doesn't step in and stop you from playing with matches or firearms or playing in traffic. So this is why the Meyer material doesn't use the term God, because the connotations are so incorrect. In German, a Wesen is an entity, a dog, a cat, a cow. They all have personalities, all have free will. But a Wesenheit, the universal consciousness, stones, water, certain gases have no personality and really no self-determination, except for the universal consciousness to a degree has a self-determination, but it doesn't really, it has such a fixed pattern that it follows. I don't know that it doesn't use much self-determination. Leben means to live in the German. Lebenskraft is your life power. And a Lebenskraft is very important. It's tied directly to your consciousness, your life power is tied directly to your consciousness. Also, there is the importance of self-cognition, learning the self, learning more about yourself, understanding, investigating, like, you know, it's okay to have negative thoughts at times, because what we want is a balance. Mostly, it's safer to focus on as much as you can on the positive or neutral positive thoughts. But every once in a while, you'll have a negative thought that comes in. And one thing you can do is a little self-cognition is, first of all, catch that thought, analyze it a little bit. What am I doing? Why am I thinking this thought? What is this about? How do I feel when I have this thought? Because the feelings grow out of the thoughts. So, for example, if you tell yourself, I'm confident, I'm optimistic, I'm relaxed, I'm cheerful, I'm enthusiastic, I'm the master of my own destiny, but I know life sends some challenges out at you. One of the challenges life will throw at you, and it's guaranteed, and it's part of the law of striving, is you'll get something that will oppose your striving. So if you work at something, if you're working at one specific thing and you're making progress and it all is looking really good and you're starting to get some enthusiasm, and then boom, there'll be a roadblock that'll come in and it'll shake you, and you may not even know what to do about it. You know, and you might have to ponder it for several days before you can come up with a plan of attack, or a week even. You're given a problem and you're not really aware of what to do. And so this is where self-cognition comes in a little bit. We have a spiritual self. in the form of what's called the innermost creational nature. And we also have a personally created self in what's called the inner nature. Now, the innermost nature is available to you. What do I mean by that? It's an important word, available. It's available, something for you to use. That innermost nature will send you impulses of wisdom and follow them. Another thing is learn assiduousness so your efforts are unremitting. They don't stop because, you know, you may ease back and not push quite as hard on a given day or two, but you'll be pushing nonetheless. So you learn not to exhaust yourself. You learn not to push yourself outside of that neutral positive balance. Let me read a little bit here from the Might of Thoughts book. As a consequence of this, with the self-cognition, there are therefore two different forms to recognize and to fathom. First, there is the inner nature, and secondly, the innermost nature. The first process of recognition leads to the inner personality-related nature, which the human being forms himself or herself and makes it into his inner personality. And it is this nature which must be recognized and fathomed in all details in order to then acknowledge the obtained results as given facts. Once the results of this self-cognition are achieved, the second part of the self-cognition follows, which now relates to the innermost creational nature of the spirit, which gives life to the material consciousness and subconsciousness, as well as the entire body. The creational impulses of striving for that which is higher must be searched for. Okay, that's part of self-cognition. I wish I was taking notes. So, search for those impulses for striving for that which is higher and recognized in the creational nature. There's so much here, and I didn't know even what to read next. The creational impulses of striving for that which is higher must be searched for and recognized in the creational nature and be specifically separated according to their particular values. In order to then carry these over to the material realm of the consciousness and to evolutively process them, in order to newly form the inner personality-related nature from them, and to awaken it to new and evolutive life. So eventually what happens is your inner nature, your ego, which has a lot of flaws, will start to evolve, and it will start to acknowledge, it will develop an evolutive attitude, and it will start to acknowledge the importance of the innermost creational nature. I am going to jump over. I've been reading a lot in the Talmud lately, which is very uncharacteristic of me. If you've been following the show for a while, you know, the past few days I have been talking about it a lot, but typically over the years I haven't. I've steered away from it to a certain degree. I read a lot, in fact, in the past few days. I wanted to share some of this. Let me start here. You know what the Talmud of Emmanuel is about? It's about Emmanuel, one of the predecessor personalities of Edward Albert Meyer, walking around, helping people with their thoughts, using the might of his thoughts to help other people with their thoughts. Has nothing to do with evil spirits being tossed out of people, demons and all that nonsense. Had nothing to do with that. And the healing wasn't miracles. They weren't miracles being performed. It was the power of the thoughts of Emmanuel helping people to look within themselves and be able to find their own abilities to heal. Let me continue here. Emmanuel recommended in this wise to deal with those sick in consciousness and those sick in the psyche, and to deal with wrong thoughts and feelings by intellect and rationality, to speak with the sufferers and to lead them to rationality so that these could free themselves from their suffering by clear thoughts and feelings. The Talmud of Emmanuel book is really about clear thoughts and feelings, a good portion of it. The direction to raise the living dead had nothing to do with the actual dead, as is shown to the contrary and completely falsely in the New Testament, with raise the dead. Truly, the ones meant by living dead are the truth unknowing, and those human beings who are completely unknowing and thus dead with regard to love, true knowledge, wisdom, and creational natural laws and recommendations. Have you ever noticed that when you're out of balance in your thinking, you feel like you're in a kind of death? Regarding the knowledge of healing or the utilizations of one's own suggestive and hypnotic powers of consciousness for the healing or self-healing of other sick human beings, in practice, only very rarely did a disciple or a female disciple, succeed in training his or her consciousness capability through love, knowledge, and wisdom to the extent that he or she would have been able to create the necessary suggestive and hypnotic powers of the consciousness. So the disciples weren't that good. They really didn't do a whole lot of healing, evidently. Let me read just a little bit more here. We're running out of time very quickly, which is sometimes interesting. The perception of time. You receive without having to pay, give therefore without compensation. No repayment should stand in line for you for love and peace and consonance, other than love and peace and consonance. Take only bed and board, given in love and renunciation, selflessness. And so you shall also have food and drink, and a place where you can lay your head and rest, so that you can also eke out your existence. Consider well every demanded, commanded fulfillment of duty and effort, work for wages. Remuneration is worthy of its compensation reward, but teaching is not a demanded, commanded effort or fulfillment of duty, which demands a repayment. So they really didn't take any pay for these efforts. Talmud of Emmanuel by Judas Iscariot. The mighty thoughts, the psyche, the way to live, and Kelk der Wahrheit. All good books. Very important books. I recommend them all. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon. Have a great evening. Goodbye.